Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
November 15th, 2005. The Digital Story. I have quite an eclectic show for you today. In fact, so eclectic that I don't even have a title for it, unless we were to call it something like Bits and Bobs, things of that nature. But I'll tell you right now some of the things I want to talk about. First, one of the questions I've been getting a lot lately have to do with ISO settings on your camera. And people have been asking me about how much they can push the ISO without getting more image noise than is tolerable. And of course, that depends a lot on the type of camera that you have and how big the image sensor is and things of that nature. So I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes today. I'll lead with that. Also want to talk about managing your memory cards. And that was a discussion that we had on the Digital Story site this week. And this was something where I had kind of gone off some old testing that I had done and things had changed, and readers were kind enough to correct me on that, and I just want to pass that along here today. So we'll talk a little bit about memory card stuff. And then the last thing I want to mention, last week's show was about buying a compact digital camera, and one of the new things that are breaking on the scene right now. Nikon and Canon both have compact cameras with Wi-Fi built into them. And that's 802.11 networking. Kodak announced their EZ1 Wi-Fi model way back in February, I believe, at the PMA show, although it's just now shipping. And so I thought I'd take a minute and talk about those cameras to see if there'd be anything that that you should be checking out for yourself. So that'll keep us busy for the next 30 minutes or so. And let's get right to the ISO stuff. So on your camera, every digital camera has an ISO setting. And that is the equivalent of film speed for those of you that came out of the film world. And ISO settings usually start at 100. Sometimes they start at 50, but normally most cameras will have 100 as the lowest setting, and then 200, 400. Many compact cameras will top out at 400, but the more advanced models in the digital SLRs will go up to 800, sometimes 1600, and even in special cases, 3200. And as you'll notice, these correspond very much with the film that we once shot with, or still do, maybe just not as often. ISO 100 traditionally gives you the best image quality. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in the film days, that would mean the best resolution, possibly the best color saturation, and the least amount of grain. Now, the digital equivalent of grain is image noise, and this is a big deal in the world of digital cameras. And people are very concerned about image noise. It shows up in two areas in particular. One is it will show up in a constant tone area, such as a blue sky, and it also shows up in the shadow areas quite often, especially if the image is a little underexposed. You'll see image noise, let's say, in the shadow area of a dark jacket or something like that. So often when someone's been burned by image noise, they went ahead and got daring and pushed their ISO up to 400 or so, and got a little underexposure, and then, oh my gosh, the image looks terrible. There's all this kind of, it's not pixelation exactly, but it's not grain exactly, but you know what it is when you see it. It's a breaking up of the image tone. And so often image quality conscious photographers will say, oh my gosh, well, I'm only going to shoot at 100 or 50 from now on, and that's that. But I wanted to talk about why you might want to reconsider, if you have been sticking with just 50 or 100 on your ISO setting, because everything is a trade-off in photography. And for instance, one of the arguments for sometimes pushing up your ISO to 200, 400, 800, or even more, is because it gives you, in low light, a faster shutter speed. And there's a trade-off, okay? If you keep it at 100 and you have a very long shutter speed, a slow one, then you're very vulnerable to something that we call camera shake, which is there's movement during the exposure. You think you're holding the camera as steady as possible, but the long shutter speed makes it impossible to really hold it steady enough without a tripod. And that small movement when you make the exposure causes the whole image to be soft looking. In other words, nothing seems to be perfectly in focus. And that's called camera shake. Now, image noise, on the other hand, doesn't, unless it's really bad, usually doesn't show up across the whole image. It will show up in particular areas, the dark areas or continuous tone areas. But you can have a very sharp image that has image noise. And of course, one of the ways to get a sharp image is to avoid camera shake, which means you have a shutter speed that's reasonable for the lens, the focal length that you have set. The rule of thumb is, in the 35 millimeter days, that you want to have a shutter speed pretty much equal to the focal length. So if you're shooting with a 50 millimeter lens, for example, then you'd want a shutter speed that was, at least 1/60th of a second. You're shooting with a 135 millimeter telephoto, then you would want a shutter speed of at least 1/125th of a second, and so on. That's a little harder to do with digital cameras because the whole focal length thing is different because of the varying sizes of the image sensors. But you sort of get the idea. Now, bumping up the ISO allows you to actually have faster shutter speeds and avoid camera shake. So one of the trade-offs that you're often looking at is, what is more important to me? When I'm holding the camera without a tripod, just holding as steady as I can, having an overall sharp image, avoiding camera shake, by getting that shutter speed up to a 30th of a second or a 60th of a second, whatever is reasonable, or keeping the ISO set low, down around 100, having a much slower shutter speed, sometimes indoors an 1/8 of a second or even 1/4 of a second, long shutter speed, and risking and most likely getting camera shake in a soft image. Now, my experience is that generally speaking, if I do have a little bit of image noise, that's easier to correct in post-production than camera shake. Camera shake, all you really have in your normal toolbox is varying sharpening filters. And sharpening images in post-production usually leads to that sort of digital look. I think over-sharpening really ruins a lot of good shots. So I try to stay away from sharpening as much as possible, except a little bit of sharpening right before I print the image. Image noise, on the other hand, there are a lot of good plugins for Photoshop and Photoshop Elements that allow you to actually cut down on image noise, and they work quite well. Now, Often they will soften the image a little bit too, but you have control over how much image noise you eliminate versus, you know, how soft the image gets. And so you can control that and find something that you look like. So in the show notes for this week's show, I will list a couple of those plugins that you can get to help you combat image noise for those situations where it shows up. But let's get back just for a second to, well, should I actually set my ISO at higher than 100? Now, I believe you can. And there will be photographers who will debate this with me. But I believe there are situations where you can. And a lot of it depends on the kind of camera that you have. This is one of those situations where it's a lot tougher for people with compact cameras only. The little point-and-shoot cameras have pretty small image sensors. They're trying to do a lot with a little, and they are more vulnerable to image noise. People kind of debate why this is, but I think the general rule of thumb still holds that the smaller the image sensor, the more vulnerable the camera is to image noise at high ISOs. So a compact camera often will do very well at ISO 100 and will show virtually no image noise in most situations. At 200, it should do pretty well, but there might be some low light situations where you will start to see a little bit of image noise. Not much, but a little bit. But by 400, by ISO 400, compact cameras are usually showing quite a bit of image noise, even on a well-exposed picture. You could even see it in a nice blue sky midday at ISO 400. Now, you probably wouldn't be shooting a blue sky at midday at ISO 400. I mean, that's the perfect situation for keeping it down at ISO 100. But the point is that they tend to produce image noise at ISO 400 no matter what you do. And for the most part, unless you really need to get the shot, and that's getting the shot and having it relatively sharp is more important than image noise, compact cameras don't do well at 400 and usually want to stay away from that. Now, if you're the kind of person that likes to shoot in low light, likes existing light photography, likes not turning on the flash indoors, and situations like that, then you might want to have another camera in addition to your compact. As I said in last week's show, I really think that all serious photographers should have a compact camera, because when you're on the go, you're more likely to grab it and stick it in your pocket, your backpack, or your purse than if you only have a large camera, which you might leave at home more often than you should, and you miss a lot of shots. On the other hand, if you are the kind of person that likes to shoot in low light, you probably need a second camera. And either one of the prosumer models, what I call advanced amateur cameras, but even better yet, a digital SLR. The Nikon D50, Nikon D70, Olympus eVolt 300, Canon Digital Rebel XT or 350D, depending if you're in North America or Europe. These are all good digital SLRs that you can get for less than $1,000. Now, the reason why they're handy for low-light shooters, so there's actually two reasons. The first one is you have a larger image sensor on those cameras, usually what we call APS size, which is roughly the size of APS film. And this larger image sensor, and usually beefed up electronics to go with it, better image processing in camera, usually means that you can get away with shooting at a higher ISO without getting too much image noise. So ISO 400 on a compact camera is usually a somewhat miserable experience. But on a digital SLR, such as the Canon Rebel XT, 400 is usually not bad at all, especially if you properly expose the image. And in fact, you can get away with ISO 800 and usually get quite acceptable results. So this difference in the size of the image sensor and the electronics that support it make a big difference in your ability to choose different ISOs. One of the questions that I got this week was, I have a Canon Digital Rebel, but I've been hesitant to move it beyond ISO 100 because I've heard that you get too much image noise as you move it up. Well, having the camera that person has, actually, you're better off to move it up to 200 or 400. You'll probably get a sharper image and won't get too much image noise. And it's always worth testing. I mean, anything that I talk about here, you want to test with your own equipment, not just totally take my word for it, but try it out for yourself. But these are thoughts for you to contemplate and experiment with, and you know, continue to push your photography to new places where you take different kinds of pictures and hopefully more exciting ones. But there's also a second reason why digital SLRs are good in low light. And that is you have the ability to put what we call a faster lens on too. Quite often the lenses, the maximum aperture, which is the amount of light that the lens will let in, on the compact cameras sometimes are maybe f4, but often f5.6 in that neighborhood, which in terms of maximum aperture, in terms of the most amount of light that the lens will let in, that's not a whole lot. But you can easily go out and get a lens for a digital SLR that has a maximum aperture of f1.8 or 2.8, which lets in much more light than a lens that only has a maximum aperture of f5.6. So suddenly, not only do you have an image sensor that can tolerate higher ISOs better, but then you can put a lens on there that lets more light into the camera. And that combination is really great for low light shooting. So I guess the recap on this is that if you like shooting in low light, if you like turning off the flash, shooting indoors, and in other shadowy situations, then I think you might want to take a look at digital SLRs and also find a lens to go with it, at least for your low light shooting, that has a maximum aperture of f2.8 or larger. And that combination will really allow you to do some exciting stuff. Now, there's one other element I should bring up, and that is we're starting to see more lenses that have image stabilization, which means they actually help compensate for camera shake. I have one. It's a Canon 28 to 135 millimeter image stabilizer. And supposedly, that image stabilization buys you 2 f-stops worth of light, which means that if normally you would need to shoot, let's say, at f2.8 to get a good exposure, and this lens will allow you to go all the way up to f5.6, you know, and still have as sharp an image. And actually, they work quite well. So that's another factor to come in. But the thing is, they are usually a little bit more expensive than just a good 50 millimeter f1.8 lens. So you have to weigh all that stuff out. So compact cameras, not so good at high ISOs. You usually want to keep them to ISO 100 or 200. But digital SLRs, I would experiment at 400, 800 indoors and see what you can get. And then check the site, and I'll list some of the plugins so that if you do happen to get a little bit of image noise, you can take it out or at least decrease it in post-processing. So that's the little ISO talk for today. Another thing I want to discuss real quickly is managing your memory cards. Now, I made a post on the site the other day where I kind of listed some tips for managing your memory cards. And one of the things that I said is that it's better to use the erase all function on the camera than the format function. And the reason why I said that was that if you ever do have to recover images that you've accidentally erased, it's easier to do that if you've only used erased all, because the format function actually removes more data. Well, I hadn't done a test on this for quite some time. And one of the things that I discovered, thanks to readers, and by the way, lots of folks have been stopping by and contributing to the posts I've been making on my photo tips. And I think that's really cool, because what happens is I'll write a piece, and in all honesty, I do pretty good job of my research, and I'm a working photographer. So most of the time, I get things right. But every now and then, I make a mistake, and like I did with this memory card thing. And so what's nice is by people contributing, by adding their comments, then it's my story plus their comments become sort of the whole truth. And this is very much the case with this piece that I wrote about erasing memory cards. Readers who were much more up to speed on this said, well, now when you format your memory cards, it doesn't overwrite the images. It actually only erases some of the header information, you know, just some of the data, but not really the pictures themselves. And in fact, you can recover pictures just as easily if you formatted your card as if you've done erase all. So I tested this for myself. I tested it with a Canon Digital Rebel XT. And sure enough, doing my tests, I did try to do a recovery with an application called Photo Rescue. And the link to the software is on the site. And after erasing all, I was able to recover 148 images off a 1 gigabyte memory card. So then I formatted it, and I ran a Photo Rescue again. And after formatting, I was able to recover 144 images, virtually the same. And I can't explain why there was even any difference, but there was. So sort of the moral of the story is that in terms of recovering images that you've accidentally erased, it doesn't seem to make much difference if you use erase all or if you choose format or reformat on your menu. You still have, those images are still on there, they're hidden, but photo recovery software can help you retrieve them in an emergency. Now, of course, this is something that you don't want to make a habit of doing, because it takes a long time usually to retrieve images, and it doesn't always turn out perfectly for every shot. But it's nice to have that option. Generally speaking, of course, what you want to do is connect your camera to the computer, or take the memory card out and put it in a memory card reader. Upload your images to your computer. Make sure they're all there. And then I like to back them up at that point onto a separate hard drive or CD or whatever your backup system is. And then I put the memory card back in the camera if I had removed it and had it in a memory card reader. And then choose format or erase all from within the camera. And that system works pretty well. Every now and then, though, we accidentally erase pictures off our computer, or they don't make it onto the computer and we accidentally erase the card. And then suddenly we go, oh my gosh, those great pictures are gone. And that's the case where sometimes something like Photo Rescue can help you retrieve those images so that you don't lose them. So that's my little bit. And you can read all the comments that readers contributed to that article right there on the digital story. And it's pretty interesting. And it was, for me, it was very enlightening and a little embarrassing I blew it in the fact that I should have done testing with the equipment that I had right now, not rely on some stuff that I had done a while back. But I certainly have learned my lesson, and readers really came to my rescue there. And now I know better. So that sort of brings up one other point, which is I've been posting about every other day or so photo tips on how to use polarizer, how to exposure compensate for bright scenes, foggy scenes, and things like that. So if you're not getting those regularly, if you're not subscribed via RSS or stopping by the site regularly, you might want to go take a look. And if you want to see just the photo tips and the photo-related stuff, there's a menu in the upper right-hand corner. It's called Jump To. It has a little drop-down menu and has all the different categories on the site. So you could just jump to and then choose photography from the list, and it will just take you to where all the photography stories are. And I try to have a photo example every time I give a tip, like how to use a polarizer. And so you get to look at a pretty picture, and then I just have a really brief description about the particular technique I'm discussing. So if you haven't gone over to the Digital Story and checked that out, I encourage you to do so. There's fun stuff, and I'm going to continue posting from now until the end of time. Okay, one last thing that I want to talk about today, and that's these Wi-Fi cameras that are starting to break out. Nikon, Canon, Kodak, more are on the way. And what does this mean exactly? Well, more and more folks have wireless networks at home, and of course they're very popular in businesses and schools. And so instead of having to connect your camera via cable to your computer, or take the memory card out and put it in a memory card reader that's connected to your computer, Wi-Fi allows you to actually transmit the pictures on the network, on the local network, to either a printer or a computer. That means basically no wires. So this is one of those things, in all honesty, that is more for the geek-oriented photographer than the everyday snap shooter. Because a lot of times you can spend more time fooling around with the setup and getting it to work right than if you actually just plug the camera in to the computer. But I do think it is a sign of things to come, and that I do think that we will see more and more printers that are Wi-Fi enabled. And so once we take a shot, we can basically send it to the printer. It can be printing out while we're taking the next shot with our camera. And this is pretty cool. I'm going to take a look at the Nikon, I believe it's the P2. A friend just bought it, and I want to borrow it for a few days, and it's Wi-Fi capable. It's a little 5.1 megapixel Coolpix, a very attractive camera, nice big 2.5-inch LCD screen on the back. And I'm going to test it on my local network. I have a printer hooked up to the Wi-Fi network here at the Story Photography Studio, and I'll see how it is to actually take a picture and then, standing right there, send it to the printer while I continue to take more pictures. And I'll report on that up the road here, hopefully within the next couple weeks. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, I would say I wouldn't get overly excited about cameras with Wi-Fi right at the moment. It's very early, and you need something, you need a network for them to communicate on. But it is also something worth keeping our eye on. And I'll give it a real-world test, and then we'll make up our minds if it's worth the extra money and also if it's worth the extra time. So that's it for this week. I'm glad you stopped by. Continue to drop by the site, and please feel free to comment on any of the articles that I put up and, of course, the podcasts themselves. Again, as I said before, your comments combined with what I contribute, that's the whole story. Until next week, this is Derek Story. Bye-bye.
your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.